Okay. Good evening. Tonight we are going to speak about what I call Halachic Men number 3. We're going to be discussing the Shach and the Taz. Thank you. We're going to be discussing the Shach and the Taz, who are the major commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya. There are 4 different sections of Shulchan Aruch. Orech Chaim deals with regular life in terms of waking up in the morning, going through the day, then going through the year cycle, etc. Choshen Mishpat deals with monetary matters. Evan HaEzer deals with matters of marriage and divorce. And Yoredeya deals with all the other various and sundry topics, like Kashrus, etc. Those are all found in Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya. The 2 major commentaries on Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya are the Shach, coolest person ever, lived 1621 to 1662. Taz is far less cool than the Shach. He lived 1586 until, 1667? 1677, thank you. That is the, 1667, I think that's a typo that I made. That is the life of the Shach and the Taz. Now, Shach and Taz are commentators on Shulchan Aruch. They are not the first commentary on Shulchan Aruch. The first commentary on Shulchan Aruch is written by the Sma, the Sefer Meir HaSeinayim, 1555 until 1614. The Sma wrote a commentary on Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat. Sma is a student of the Ramah. Sma had a manuscript of the Ramah's own handwriting, and he used that to write his commentary on Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat. After the Sma's commentary on Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat, the Shach also writes on Choshen Mishpat, the Taz also writes on Choshen Mishpat, but then we go through a time period that Choshen Mishpat is really not studied so much. There's a huge change in the world. At the time of the Sma, Jews in Poland had autonomy. Courts in Poland were allowed to kill people. There were 2 Jewish communities in history that were allowed to kill, no? There were the Jews in Poland were allowed to kill, and the Jews in Spain at one period were allowed to kill. Besides that, the authorities generally didn't allow us to impose Beis Din and put people to death. But we know that at the time of the Sma, Choshen Mishpat was alive and well, because Jewish courts had autonomy, so much so they could even kill. That is the story of the Sma. We're not going to focus very much on the Sma tonight. We will instead be focused on the Shach and the Taz. Okay? So far so good, but the Sma is the first commentary. Now, why did I mention that the Sma is the first commentary if not talking about it? Because the Sma set the tone for what a commentary on Shulchan Aruch is. You see, Shulchan Aruch, as a work, met much opposition. That's what we spoke about last week. There are some who said that you can't paskin based on this book called Shulchan Aruch because it's too concise, and he only gives like 1 opinion, and really you need all the opinions, and you have to go back to the sources and figure it out. That was one major criticism of the Shulchan Aruch. Others criticized Shulchan Aruch because he didn't quote sources. Others criticized Shulchan Aruch because he didn't give the reasons. Right? The Maharsha said, don't follow Shulchan Aruch, it's a terrible book, because people are going to paskin wrong. They won't look at the Gemara, etc. The Lavush said Shulchan Aruch is a bad book because it doesn't give reasons. So the Lavush wrote his own book that contained the laws and the reasons together in paragraph form. Comes along the Sma, and the Sma said, you know what, the Lavush is a terrible book also. Because the Sma says, when I have the law and the reason together in the same paragraph, people don't know how to separate between the law and the reason. They all integrate together. And says the Sma that that's bad. Because if I want to paskin properly, I need the law. And then I try to figure out what's the source of the law. And then I also have the reasoning behind the law. And then what I can do is I understand, is this law correct? Is the application proper? Is it improper? Etc. That's what I can do. But when they have the law and the reason and they combine together, they fuse together, so then I'm in trouble. Because if the law and the reason are being put together, so what's going to happen is that people will mistake law for reason, reason for law, and they'll never properly challenge the law based on their own minds and the own meaning of what this law should be. They will always integrate the reason for the law. So therefore, says the Sma, I don't like the commentary of the Lavush. I'm going to write my own commentary. And the Sma set the basis for all future commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, which is you have Shulchan Aruch intact, but they have a little letter, a note. And the note sends me to a comment of someone else on the page, but that comment explains the reasoning behind this law. That allows my mind to focus on, okay, this is the law, let me try to understand it, and now I'll look at so-and-so, and he gives a reason, but I realize that that's only one attempted reason for this law. Maybe I should try to come up with my own reasons for the law. Right? Maybe I could challenge the law based on the source. So the Sma set the guidelines for the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch. He gives sources, and he gives reasons, but they're not integrated in the text. All subsequent commentaries of Shulchan Aruch did the same. That is why Shulchan Aruch is a living text. Because we analyze it in different ways every generation, right? Different Rabbonim. I can't tell you how many emails I got today about various aspects of Yom Kippur based on the email I sent out, and like people are saying, well, what do you do about this, etc. Many questions. And the fact is, you know, I could say, okay, yeah, this is the source and this is the reason behind it. And we have interplay, we have conversation, because the reason is not incorporated in the text. This is the contribution of the Sma and all future commentaries, and this is why the Lavush is virtually unheard of. In our shul over here, we do not have a set of Lavush, no? We don't have any Lavush in the shul. Right? It's not studied. The Sma is studied. As much as people study Choshen Mishpat today, the Sma is certainly studied. All the commentaries are studied. That's the difference between a commentary and a code. Good? So now, let us talk about the two major commentaries we are going to do tonight, the Taz and the Shach. I give for you basic biographies of the Taz and the Shach. Taz, right, Rabbi David Halevi, is born 1586 in Ludmer, Poland. I like Ludmer. My grandmother, Allah Shalom, is from Ludmer. It's a nice town. It's probably not, actually. But whatever, we'll say it's a nice town. So that's Ludmer, Poland. Taz is born there. Taz's father is Rabbi Shmuel. His name is Rabbi David ben Shmuel Halevi. No one knows anything about Rabbi Shmuel. He was not an important figure. He was not a Talmud Chacham. He is never once quoted. So the Taz basically came from nowhere. He has a brother who's a big Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Isaac Halevi. He's the Rav of Ludmer. He writes tshuvas. The Taz, his brother, quotes his tshuvas, right? So the Taz has a brother, but it's like the Taz doesn't have much of a father, right? The Taz marries the daughter of the Bach, and then he becomes the Rav in Ustraha. Okay? That's what it says here in the Bar Ilan CD. This is all correct. He's the Rav in Ustraha. While in Ustraha, he writes his commentary on Yoredeya called Turei Zahav, called the Taz. This comes out, the commentary is published in 1646. That's the basic introduction to the Taz. There's one important little historical note here, where two important details are left out of the Bar Ilan so far. They are as follows. The Taz, when he first got married, lived in Krakow. His father-in-law is the Bach, Rabbi Yoel Sirkis. Taz marries his daughter, Rivka, right? He lives in Krakow together with his father-in-law. His father-in-law is the Rav of this largest community, Krakow. He supports them. Everything is great. Taz lives on top of the shul in Krakow. And the Taz has six children. A fire breaks out in the shul. Two of his children die. Two sons die. The Taz attributes the death of his two sons to the fact that he was living on top of shul. This is the Taz in Or Chaim Simin Kuf Nun Aleph. Taz says, I lived on top of Shul, and I got punished for that. There's a din in Shulchan Aruch that you're not supposed to live on top of the Shul. The Kiddush of the Shul goes all the way up. You're not supposed to... Apparently, the YU base medrash used to be used for the Balabatim during the week. Reb David Lifshitz had a minyan for the Balabatim. And the yeshiva students would daven in the basement of the Morgenstern dormitory. So when Rabbi Shechter was a student in yeshiva, he was very nervous because he didn't want to sleep on top of the part of the dormitory that's on top of the shul, because he's worried about the story of the Taz and how his two sons died. So he asked that his bed be moved to the other side of the dorm, not to be on top of the shul. At this point, they built the Sephardi-based medrash in the morgue. Right? The morgue is a name for the Morgenstern dormitory. So now both sides have a base medrash. You're stuck wherever you go. So anywhere you live in the morgue, you are on top of a base medrash, and we have this great question of the Taz. So that is one issue in the Taz's life. After the Taz has this fire in Krakow, he runs away from Krakow with his remaining children. He settles in a different community, in a community called Polostava, where he became a local rabbi in Polostava. This is a detail that's not mentioned in the Bar Ilan, but it's quoted in all of the books, including this book called Taz. Right? This is the biography of the Taz. It's written by Rabbi Elijah Shaket. I bought it actually at the farm sale for $7.80. I spent a lot of money on this. This is the biography of the Taz. There's another biography of the Taz called Toldos HaTaz. There's, actually, the Taz has a lot of biographies. The Shach doesn't have biographies. That's something that we'll talk about in a few minutes. But Taz goes to this small community, becomes a rabbi there. While in that small community, the Bach, the Taz's father-in-law, chief rabbi of Krakow, comes to visit his young son-in-law and sees that as a rabbi of a small community, he wasn't getting much money, and he was living in abject poverty. The Bach says, I don't like this. And therefore, I'm going to get you a good job. And he he interceded, and his son becomes the rabbi in Posen. So he's in Posen for a while. Then he doesn't like Posen, so he goes to Ostraha, where he is the rabbi over there. Then the... let's continue in the Bar Ilan. We'll look at some of the sources inside after, but just I want to give you the biography of the Taz first. Miraculously saved during the Kazakh uprisings of 1648-1649. Right, it's almost Tisha B'Av. That is Khmelnytsky. Right? Khmelnytsky is a hated figure among Jews for good reason. He, basically, he was upset with the landowners, and he established a rebellion of the peasants. And in the course of this rebellion, thousands and thousands of Jews were killed. 6,000 Jews were killed in the town of Nemirov alone on the day of Chof Sivan. Consequently, there are still communities that recite Slichus and fast on Chof Sivan. Right? That's the day of the massacre at Nemirov. This is part of the Khmelnytsky revolt. He is miraculously saved during the Kazakh uprisings of 1648-1649. Now, keep in mind the dates. 1646, he's in Ostraha, he publishes his book. 1648-1649 is this revolt. During the Khmelnytsky revolt, the Taz runs away. He goes to, according to tradition, we don't have this in any real historical sources, he goes to a fortress in the town of Ulik, and all the Jews are in the fortress in Ulik, and Khmelnytsky's people are coming and they are attacking, and the Taz falls asleep and he has a dream, and in the dream it says, "V'hoshati yaseir lema'an David avdi," I'm going to save the city because of David, because of the Taz's name is David. So the Taz wakes up from this dream, he says, "Rabosai, we're going to be saved." Right? And miraculously, there was a huge fire in the distance, and they heard some loud noises, and the Khmelnytsky peasant rebels run away. And that is on Chof Vav Sivan, and they are saved. And the Taz writes a kinna about the events of the Khmelnytsky massacres, and in that kinna, he mentions, that kinna is actually published in, there are kinnos of Kinnos of Poland that the Taz wrote, the Kinnos of Litva that the Shach wrote. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But the Taz writes in his Kinnos that, yes, there are terrible tragedies, but that we should also not forget the huge Hatzalah that happened on Chof Vav Sivan when we were saved. Now, we don't know exactly if the story happened the way I just said it, but that is the basic source. Okay, so the Taz has his episode where he is face-to-face with the Gezer of Tach V'Tat, with the Khmelnytsky massacres. Now, Let's talk about one other important episode in Jewish history at this time. Right? What else happened about the time of the Chmelnytsky uprising? Shabtai Tzvi. Right? This Taz also had a connection to the Shabtai Tzvi episode. Now, Shabtai Tzvi, we know, is this false Mashiach, right? Shabtai Tzvi was believed to be Mashiach by many Rabbonim. And the story that is quoted and has good sources says that the rabbis in Poland wanted to test Shabtai Tzvi to see if he's the real thing. So while Shabtai Tzvi is in the town of Gallipigol somewhere, so they send two rabbis to go and investigate Shabtai Tzvi. This is in the year 1666. And the two rabbis who are sent to Shabtai Tzvi are Naftali, the son of the Taz, and the Taz's stepson, after Rivka, the daughter of the Bach, died, the Taz married some girl who came into the marriage with a son named Arye Leib. Arye Leib wrote a tshuva sefer called Shagas Arye, not the famous Shagas Arye, the other Shagas Arye that no one heard of. It's called Shagas Arye v'Kol Yehuda. No one ever heard of this sefer, but the YU library actually has a copy of it. Taz's stepson, the Shagas Arye v'Kol Yehuda, and the Taz's son go to meet Shabtai Tzvi to test him out. They are very impressed by Shabtai Tzvi. Shabtai Tzvi, and Gershom Shalom spends a lot of time on this episode, Shabtai Tzvi asks, well, how's your father doing? How is the great rabbi, the Taz, doing? And they said, well, you know, he's not feeling so well. He's an older man already. This is 1666. He's born in 1586. He's 80 years old. Right? Er is an alter mensch, they say. So Shabtai Tzvi apparently took a cube of sugar, and he wrote a letter. First he writes a letter to the Taz, and he takes a cube of sugar, and he gives him a robe, and he gives him a cloth embroidered with gold, and he says, take this back to the Taz. And that's the only thing that we know about the story. We don't know what happened when the Taz got these gifts. Now, in the letter that Shabtai Tzvi wrote to the Taz, he signs the letter as, I am Mashiach. Right? That is the way he signs the letter, which is apparently the way Shabtai Tzvi signed many of his letters. We don't know what happened. There is a tradition out there that Shabtai Tzvi warmly received the letter, that the Taz warmly received the letter from Shabtai Tzvi, and consequently, people say the Taz was a Sabbatean. No? There is a school of thought like that. That's Gershon Sholem. President Zalman Shazar wrote an article, President of Israel, Zalman Shazar wrote an article where he disputed this. And he said, no, we have no evidence whatsoever that the Taz received the gift. We only know that Shabtai Tzvi sent a gift. Now, we do know that the Taz's son and stepson were impressed by Shabtai Tzvi. But we don't know much more about that. We don't know enough to say that the Taz was a Sabbatean. So far, so good? So there are two important episodes in the lifetime of the Taz. Taz is directly involved in them, right? The Chmelnytsky massacres and then Shabtai Tzvi. He is involved in both. This is the story of the Taz. Good. Now, why did he call his book Turei Zahav? Why did he call it Turei Zahav? So the word, first word, again? It's based on the Tur, but it's not. It's a commentary on Shulchan Aruch, not on the Tur.
So the
Taz writes in his introduction, if you look at the last page over here, so this is the introduction of the Taz to Shulchan Aruch. So it begins where I have the letter, the number one. Vihine, Zesh Aloshanim Kibunya Kaha Kadosh in Ustra. And that's how we know he was in Ustra, huh? And he was accepted to teach a lot of Torah, and they made me a big base medrash, etc. And they supported my yeshiva, and everything is fine. And then he writes, that I was writing this book and I wanted to publish it, but it didn't work originally. And then here, let's pick up from the bottom the bottom of this first column. Achare shuvi nichamti l'asher zichiti l'atziyah davar lefnei chashuvim hen tamidim hen sh'ar lomdim v'hutav b'neihem. Tesili, he says, I changed my mind because I presented my ideas to many choshev, of many important people, whether they are students or other lomdim. V'kiviti lo yitbarach she'yitachnu b'enei chachmei hadar, and I hoped to God that the wise people of the generation would accept, would like my words, etc. V'karasi shem chiburi zeh to reizahav. I called it to reizahav. Liyot sheyitbareru bazeh divrei hator atzmo v'hashulchan aruch im hagos nechutzos v'remez lecheshbon shmi shehu kecheshbon zahav. That's it. He calls his book to reizahav because he explains the Torah. Now, he doesn't really explain the Torah. We'll talk about that in a minute. But he says, I quote to Rezav because I explained the Torah. And Zahav is gematria what? Zion is 7, He is 5, Vez is 2. That equals 14. His name, the Taz's name, is David. David is gematria 14. Right? 4 plus 6 plus 4 is 14. That's why the book is called Turei Zahav. Tor and David. Zahav is David. That's what he says. Now, okay. That is the comment of the Taz. Now, what do you mean the book is on the Torah? It's really not on the Torah. So the answer is that when you read Taz, the Taz comments on Shulchan Aruch, but occasionally the Taz will also write an essay. He'll say, well, the Torah mentions position so-and-so. For example, in Yerudei Simin Sadi Gimel, there's a discussion about if I cook milk in a fleshik pot, let's say. So then there's discussion about kashering the pot. So generally we assume that earthenware containers don't get kasher. There's a position of the Baal HaEter that you can kasher earthenware containers. It's rejected. It's not accepted. But the Taz decides to give you a whole essay about this position because it's two Rezahav and he wants to explain the position that's found in the Torah. Good? So that's the Taz. He explains the Torah. Is this important? I don't think it's particularly important. The Taz wanted to explain the Torah because he tells you at the beginning of his introduction that he started writing an introduction to a commentary on the Torah, but then he gave up. So he just included a little bit in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, but to my mind, it's mostly a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. This is the discussion of the Taz. Good? Let's move on to the Taz's major opponent, who, as we mentioned, is the coolest man ever, the Shach. Now, okay, I have a whole theory about the Shach, which I will try to give you, but let's read one or two lines in the Heiliger Bar Ilan biography, and then we will read a little bit of the Shach's introduction, and I'll tell you my theories. Okay, Shach, Rabbi Shabtai ben Meir HaKohen, is a leading halachic authority. Now, the Shach comes from Gur Yichus. Meir HaKohen, the Shach's father, was a prominent Rav. Meir HaKohen, the Shach's father, wrote tshuvas to many people. We have his tshuvas printed at the back of his son's Sefer the Gevuras HaNoshim. The Shach quotes his father over 50 times. We'll see some of the references a little bit later. Meir is very important. Shach's grandfather was also very important. Shach's grandfather is Moshe. Moshe is the Dayan down the street in Frankfurt am Main. Right? That is Moshe, the grandfather of the Shach. Now, interestingly, just to trace Jewish history in one family, Shach's grandfather lives in Frankfurt am Main. Shach's father, Meir, where did he live? Lublin. Where's the Shach born? Where does he live? In Lithuania. In Lita. The Shach is born in a small town in Lita in the year 1621. He's born in a town called Amstelov. Amstelov is somewhere, you can't find it on a map. You can't. It's a mamish. It's a half a horse town. Half a horse town means that the tail is outside of the city. Right? That is Amstelov. Now, the Shach is born in Lithuania. That means that in three generations of this family, we see them going from Germany to Poland to Lithuania. Good? Fine. Shach dies in 1662. He spends most of his life in Lithuania. Very nice. Now,
he's young.
What? Very young. Shaf died at 41 years old. Right? Shaf dies at 41. Taz dies at 80 samad. Okay. Now, Shach writes his commentary on Yoridaya in the year 1646. No, I think that's here also.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, 1646. At the age of 24. Anyone want to do the math? It's off a little bit, no? He's born in 1621, but okay. Things are approximate. Fine. So the Shach writes his commentary at the age of 24. Now the Shach has a problem. Shach has a problem. See, the Shach lives in Lithuania. Who are the rabbis in Lithuania before the Shach? Can anyone mention a single rabbi in Lutza before the Shach? Good. Well, actually, there is one. There's one Rav who you can find in Lithuania, like in the 14th century. We know that Jews lived in Lutza from the 13th century on, at least. We don't know any rabbis in Lutza. First rabbi we know in Lutza is the Shach and his compatriot, the Chalkas Mechokek, who wrote a commentary on Eben HaEzer, and they were together on the Beis Din in Vilna. So far, so good? So the Shach is the first real rabbi in Vilna. Now, there's a problem. You're a 20-some-odd-year-old kid. You're writing a major work on Shulchan Aruch. You're from Vilna, which is a cultural backwater. You don't have smicha. Why doesn't he have smicha? Well, he doesn't have smicha because there are no rabbis in Lutza to give you smicha. The rabbis are all in Poland.
His father.
Okay, so his father probably could have given him smicha, but I guess he felt it was a bad idea to ask for smicha from daddy.
Why did he go there to begin with?
What?
Why did the father go there to begin with?
Why did he go there? He went there to be a Rav. Right? In other words, this is a developing community. Right? The Center for the Jewish Future would be very proud. You're going out to Lita. You're making Jews. Right? This is great. But, now, so the Shach here. So the Shach does not have smicha. So he wants to get smicha. So he travels before the Sefer is published, after it's written. Right? He travels to Poland to try to get smicha. And he got himself 18 different smichas from 18 rabbis in Poland. And in the first edition of the Shach, you see them. He printed them. Why does he print his smichas with his sefer? Because he's a little boy, and he's writing a sefer, and it's more than that. It's not just that he's a 20-year-old kid writing a sefer, but the Gadol Hadar, same year, 1646, the Taz, Gadol Hadar man, is writing a commentary. Everybody knows that Taz is publishing his book, right? So, you better, right, prove yourself. So he gets
ducks lined up in the row.
Right, so he has all his ducks lined up. That's what the Shach does. He gets his 18 smichas to publish his book. So far, so good. Now, the Taz, by the way, is not just the major rabbi. It says over here somewhere in the Taz ended up serving as a member of the Var Arba Arutzos. Right after the Taz had been in Ustraha, he ended up going on from community to community for a while. He ended up settling in Lvov. Lvov apparently had inner Lvov and outer Lvov. There are two different communities. The Taz first was a rabbi of outer Lvov. Then there was some battle, war, something. He ended up becoming the rabbi of inner Lvov. But as the rabbi of Lvov, he had a seat on the Council of Four Lands. Now, the Var Arba Arutzos, in addition to being an administrative body, also gave haskomas to books. And the Var Arba Arutzos, you could not publish a book without the approbation of the Council of Four Lands. So far, so good? According to a tradition that Rav Soloveitchik quotes from his grandfather, but does not come from anywhere else, the story goes like this. The Shach needs smicha. Shach has a book to publish. He shows up in Poland. Here's my book. Chief rabbi in Lvov is, or chief at this time in Ostraha, major figure is the Taz. He goes to the Taz. He says, give me smicha for the book. The Taz, according to Rav Soloveitchik's grandfather, read the Shach's book, realized that the Shach's book is better than his own, and decided, I'm not giving you smicha. Consequently, Rav Soloveitchik says, we don't paskin like the Taz. We paskin like the Shach. And when the Rav would teach Yerideya, the Rav would not teach the Taz. Now, this was true in the early years. In the later years, the Rav was getting bored because he taught Yerideya every other year, so he started teaching Tazos occasionally. But everyone who was in the Rav Shir in the 50s and early 60s would tell you the Rav didn't teach Taz. Why? Because of this story. Rav Schechter quotes the story in the book Nefesh HaRav. When the book Nefesh HaRav came out, so Rav Meir Goldrich brings a copy of the Nefesh HaRav to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach reads the entire book while Rav Meir Goldrich is there, and he tells Rav Meir Goldrich, go and tell Rav Herschel Schechter that when he republishes the book, not to publish the story again, because it's not respectful to the Taz. The book has come out in two subsequent editions. Story is there. Don't fully understand why, but that's the story. Okay, so now, this is an important story on a certain level, because what Rav Soloveitchik is saying is that based on this story, that's why we follow the Shach instead of the Taz, correct? There is a tradition from the Var Arba Ha'aratzos here. Here, if you look in the Bar Ilan, they even quote this. First, they quote all the disputes between the Shach and Taz. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Then he writes, the Shach and Taz are most important commentaries on Shulchan Aruch Yerideya. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines on the bottom. They're the most important commentaries on Yerideya. Despite the decision of the Var Arba Aratzos, the Council of Four Countries, that where the two disagree, the Halacha follows the Taz, it's customary today to follow the ruling of the Shach in most cases. That's Beferish and Bar Ilan. No? Why is this? So we have one approach, right? We have this story. There's another approach that I think might be true, which is that we follow the Shach, not the Taz, because of the potential tainting of Shabtai Tzvi to the Taz. The Shach was untainted by Shabtai Tzvi. But if we accept Gershon Sholem's interpretation of the story, etc., that the Taz received and happily received these gifts from Shabtai Tzvi, so maybe, perhaps, that's why we pass in like the Shach over the Taz. This book, called Taz, right, by Elijah J. Shaka. Elijah J. Shaka, anyone know who he is? No? Okay, so he is a conservative rabbi. It's a nice book. It's an okay book. He actually recently wrote a biography of Professor Lieberman. Okay, there's a new biography that the seminary came out, well, 4 or 5 years ago. So that's him. Okay, that's Shaka. There are two authors. I've forgotten the name of the other guy. So, in his book, he contends that the reason why we follow the Shach and not the Taz, and the Var Arba Aratzos said that we should follow the Taz, not the Shach, is because they take different approaches to the way they explain Shulchan Aruch. In other words, the Taz, Shach claims, is Turei Zahav. It's more of a wide-ranging discursive work. It's a work on the Tor as much as it's a work on the Shulchan Aruch. That's what he writes. And Shach, he says, is just a commentary. People were very nervous about commentaries because people didn't want the codification that came about through Shulchan Aruch. People didn't want this small apodictic, these are the rules, do this, not this, 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 this. People didn't want that. People wanted the more elaborative explanations. And he says, well, that's why the Var Arba Aratzos didn't follow the Shach and followed the Taz, because people wanted the elaboration. But later on, people changed their approach, and Shulchan Aruch became an accepted work of halacha, and then people started following the Shach, not the Taz. That's his argument. I think he is dead wrong, because to my mind, it is what we would say in Yiddish, punkt vakert. I think the Shach is more elaborative, and the Taz is more of a commentator. Yes, the Taz occasionally will give you an essay about a particular line in the Torah, but most of what the Taz does is simply to explain the Shulchan Aruch. Most of what the Shach does is not to explain the Shulchan Aruch, but the Shach is marshalling hundreds and hundreds of additional sources besides the Shulchan Aruch. The Shach effectively was trying to write a new Beis Yosef. If you remember, the Beis Yosef is the work that we spoke about 2 weeks ago. The Beis Yosef calls all of the different sources. And in calling all of the sources, he's basically saying, this is what this one says, this is what this one says, this is what this one says. Beis Yosef has his own rules of how you paskin, But the main job of Beis Yosef is to cull sources. The Shach, similarly, is culling sources. Now the Shach has a different approach to how to decide among the different sources that he culls, that we'll have to talk about, but effectively, I think the Shach is a more elaborative work than the Taz is, and that's something I want to discuss with you as we move on. Okay, so now let's just do two or three very quick points. Relationship between Shach and Taz. Ready? Did the Shach and Taz like each other? Did they hate each other? Hey, it's an important question, no? It's an important question. Did they ever meet each other, by the way? Well, yeah, we have their Smicha story, right? And the Shach himself writes about a meeting with the Taz. I know one person here doesn't like when they go out of order, but I'm going to go out of order anyway. Let's turn to the back page, number 5. Okay, this is the Hakdama of the Shach to the book Nekudat HaKesef. Nekudat HaKesef are the Shach's comments on the Taz. The Taz wrote his book. The Shach sat down and argued very often on comments of the Taz, and he critiques it. That's called Nekudat HaKesef, right? Now, the Shach did not publish Nekudat HaKesef until after he was dead. He published the Shach. Well, he was alive. Came out in 1646. Nekudat HaKesef came out after he's dead. But he prepared the book for publication beforehand. So, writes the Shach in his introduction to Nekudat HaKesef. Amar HaMchaber, the author writes, Al Yale Aleif HaKorei B'Sifri Zeh. I know, this requires better eyesight than some people have. But don't think, the reader should not think, שמפני שהיה לי חס ושלום איזה מחלוקת עם בעל תורי זהב, או יש לי בליבי איזה תינה עליו, דיברתי השגות על ספרי. Don't think that because I had a machlokes, I had a dispute with the Taz, that that's why I wrote notes on his book. כי הלא נודע לכל, כי נזכאים בנו אסווהי בסופה. Everybody knows that we loved each other at the end. והתורה מחזרת אחר אכסניה שלו, Seisi achsanya lahabal ture zahav, vahaya etzli shlosha yomim, v'chibativ kavo gadol, asher lo yi'uman ki yisupar. He says, everybody knows that the Taz spent 3 days in my house, I gave him tremendous kavod, it was wonderful, we loved each other, he writes at the end that the Taz even gave him a kiss. Right? Now, the Shach is saying that me and the Taz were best buds. Do we believe this or don't we believe this? Well,
open question,
right? Now, again, I don't have a problem saying that sometimes when Rabbanim disagree, you know, they have expressions that really sound like they don't like each other. If you read some of the notes that the Bahamur has on the Ravid, he writes, Domani she'en lo moach bekot kado. It seems to me that there's no brain in his skull. That's not an expression of love, right? Right, writing that he must have been sleeping when he wrote these comments. Right, these types of things. Amina kinayim v'shachav ravam l'hashmaitza. Right, in other words, these types of expressions are fighting type of comments. It could be that they didn't like each other. And there are many comments that the Shach has toward the Taz that are really bitter, acerbic, strong, fighting comments. You see, if you look in the Bar Ilan, they tell you that after the Shach was written, the Taz wrote a page called Daf Acharon, where the Taz commented on the Shach. And then the Shach responded to the Daf Acharon of the Taz. Here, how do they say it? Reb David's rejoinder, the Daf Acharon, was related critique by Reb Shabtai in a work called Kuntras Acharon. Right? That's what they have, this Daf Acharon followed by Kuntras Acharon. For some reason, again, another reason I don't like Shachet's book, is Shachet writes, well, we don't have these works. We don't have the Daf Acharon or the Kuntras Acharon. It's absolutely not true. Right, we have it right here in the Shulchan Aruch. It's absolutely false. I have no idea why he writes that. I think it's because it's not at the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch. You have to turn to the last page. But you have to make it all the way to the end. You get to the end and you see it's not there. Okay, here it is there, whatever it is. Fine. So now, so that's one point about the Shach. I think that the Shach actually originally really loved the Taz, and they really got along. But after they had this Smicha episode, if it were. And after the Taz goes and critiques the Shach's work, so then the Taz says, I don't like him anymore. And then the Taz began to fight against him. But when the Shach wrote his original notes on the Taz, they really got along. That's my impression, but I have no proof. Okay, one other point I just want to make from the introduction to the Shach, if you look to where I have number 4. So basically he writes, I'm a little kid and I'm trying to publish a book. This is his introduction. Right? This introduction does not make it to the Bar Ilan for some reason. It's very annoying, I know. But it doesn't make the Bar Ilan. Says the Shach, I'm a little kid, I'm trying to publish a book, and right where I have that arrow, Ki ein tami kamoni machuya bein ha-horim ha-gedolim, a student like me should not decide between the great mountains, Hagon, Reb Yosef Karo, and Reb Moshe Israelish, who he calls Chami Zikeini. What does Chami Zikeini mean? My father-in-law grandfather. That means his wife's grandfather. The Ramah, says the Shach, was his wife's grandfather. The Shach's wife was named Yenta. She is the daughter of a rabbi, not a rabbi, actually. He was a rich man, I'm sorry. His name was Tauber, Reb Samson Tauber. He was a wealthy man. He supported the Shach his entire life. But we don't know exactly how the lineage works. There's an article in the journal Yeshurun, volume 13, to try to figure out exactly how this lineage works. But the Shach says that the Ramah is my grandfather. Point one. The Shach that we have is written only on Choshen Mishpat and Yoredeya. But the Shach tells us that he wrote commentaries on all four volumes of Shulchan Aruch. The Shach on Orech Chaim he refers to 5 or 6 different times. His son refers to the fact that the father wrote a commentary on Eben HaEzer. Also, again, we don't have these. The Taz wrote on all four Shulchan Aruchs. Fine. So this is the Shach and the Taz. Now, I contend that the Shach, by the way, is the prototypical Litvak. Usually when we think about who's the ideal Litvak, so the person that comes to mind is Elijah Kramer of Vilna, no? The Gaon. Right? The Vilna Gaon, 1720 to 1797, he was the prototype of the Litvak. Litvaks, according to tradition, are very different than Polish or Jews. Right? A Litvak is cerebral. A Litvak is very non-emotional. Right? Is this correct? Apparently a Litvak has the second toe bigger than the first toe, but no one knows why. Right? That is the story of Litvaks. A Polish Yid is excited. Right? A Polish Yid, the Polish Jews, they learn Popol. Litvish Jews, they just try to find Pshat. Right? This is the tradition, the difference between a Polish Jew and a Litvish Jew. The prototype of the Litvish Jew is the Gaon. In fact, the Gruz picture used to traditionally hang in homes in Litta. A Jewish home, just like a Lubavitcher home, always has a picture of the Rebbe. A Litvish home would have a picture of the Gra. The Gra, there are stories about the Gra. Stories that are more Hasidic than any Hasidic story. There's a whole book called The Aliyos Eliyahu. No? The Aliyos Eliyahu came out in 1856, I think, for the first time. The Aliyos Eliyahu is a storybook about Gedolim, stories of the Gra. He's 3 years old, and he has this kash, and he stumped this gadol. When he was 4, he stumped that gadol. Right? It's that type of story. The only other gadol who I know that we have stories like this about, and these are not written, but these are in folklore, to a certain extent, is the Shach. There is a Marcus Lehman story about the Shach. I read this as a kid. It's called something or another. I can find out what it is. I can tell you what it's called. There's a Marcus Lehman story about the Shach. Oh, Faith and Courage is a Marcus Lehman story about the Shah. The one that I have was printed in Jerusalem in 1981. There are stories about the Shah that you could find online in Arabic, even. There's a writer called Masoud Marek who likes writing Gedolim stories online. They have stories about the Gra and about the Shah. These stories are like amazing stories about how at age 5 he was stumping the whole world with this question, etc. Those type of stories. The same type of story they have about the Gra. The Shah also, like the Gra, is into source criticism, no? In the conservative movement, Professor Ginsberg in Scholars and Saints, that's his book called. So he wrote a monograph about the Gra, where he writes that the Gra is the father of both higher and lower criticism. I don't know how on earth they got that. Certainly it's not the type of criticism that's done today, but the Gra was into text criticism, no? The Gra's whole approach to learning is, okay, well, you're quoting the Gemara, what does the Gemara really say? You quote, right? What's the real source? It's the Yerushalmi. I'm going to paskin like the real source. It's back to the basics. The person who did back to the basics work before the Gra is the Shach. The Gra has a certain boldness about him. The Gra would write that everybody else is wrong, I'm right. No? Do you know who else did that? The Shach. Let me show you a few examples. Okay? Let me show you a few examples. We'll go through this a little bit quickly. First of all, just the first source that I have over here very quickly is the Shach in Yerideya Simon Beis. Right, where the part that I underline says, Hagon Adoni Mori Veravi Zal Harini Kaparat Mishkavo. My father, Harini Kaparat Mishkavo. Harini Kaparat Mishkavo means I should atone for his death. This is what the Gemara Kedushin says you should say within the year of your parents' passing. That tells me that the Shach's father died in 1645. Right? Because it's published in 1646. Fine. Now, that's also interesting. The Shach's father added a few lines of a poem at the end of the Shach's introduction, a poem about how great my son is. Yeah? But apparently, the Shach's father never saw the publication of this work. Fine, whatever it's worth. The Shach, the first time he quotes his father, says, Harein Kapas Mishkava, afterwards, he doesn't quote him. The Shach also quoted his mother as being a great scholar. This is rare in Judaism, that we are quoting a woman as having halachic opinions. The Shach quotes his mother, right? Basically, there was a practice that at a chasana, they would make a huge challah, and different people would pull off chunks of the huge wedding challah, and then they would each take challah from the small chunk that they pulled off. Right? We know that you take challah if you need like 3 to 5 pounds of dough together, you take challah, right? 3 pounds without a bracha, 5 pounds with a bracha, etc., right? That's what we generally assume, but there's a halacha that when you put everything together, you take one challah for the whole thing. But at the weddings, people would take a whole chunk off the wedding challah, and then they take challah from that little chunk. So says the Shach, well, my mother, my mother didn't do that. But it's the Shach is saying that my mother knew how to learn. And she realized not to do this practice, so the Shach is saying that his mother is a great scholar. Now, this is important. Gra history says that his mother is a huge tzaddik, his father is a big tzaddik. We know very little about them. About the Shach's father, we know a lot. About the Shach's mother, one thing. Fine. Now, another reason why I think the Shach is like the prototypical goyin, so to speak, is because you know what, let's just do this very quickly. Let's turn to the next page. We'll come back to the stuff over here. And just very quickly, there's text criticism in the Shach. The Shach uses an expression, ta'asu, over 800 times. Ta'asu means you're making a mistake. The Taz doesn't use it. Ta'asu means I know better than you. Right? Now, the Shach not only is saying everyone else is making a mistake, here I give you a Shach and Kuf Pei Beis, just you only have to look at the underlying parts. The Shach then quotes, well, it's obvious that you're wrong. There's a complicated issue about Shlichus, he says, because you're quoting the Mordechai. Well, everybody knows that the Mordechai's main student is the Aguda, and the Aguda says the opposite of you, therefore it has to be a mistake in the text. Therefore the Shach changes the text. Who else would change texts like this? The Gra did. Okay? The Shach says that here, the last part, the fourth page, he says, "Bishas shalafaneinu, we don't have it, but I did find v'chei matzasi bishas al klaf yashan no shan." He gives us harosh v'haran. In other words, he says, "I don't have it in the regular Gemaras, but I have on a Gemara that I found on a very old piece of parchment." That is interesting. The shot is looking at manuscripts. No? The shach is not only looking at manuscripts of Gemaras. If you go through some of these other sources very quickly, the shach has manuscripts of different Rishonim, and he's pointing out that there are differences in the printed versions of the Rishonim. Here, look at the next shach. Shach in Simen Sadi Dalet. In the parentheses, end of the shach. He quotes in the books of the Smak that are printed in Kahal Kodesh Krakow, and it's quoted in the Kolbo, but and the Marashakos and the Isra Heter, but in the Smak that's quoted in Venetia, the language is mistaken. The Shach has two different editions of the Smak, and he is comparing them. That is called text criticism. This is never done by the Taz, this is never done by anyone else of this generation. There's not a single other commentator in Shulchan Aruch who is comparing the texts of Rishonim. And the Shach does this all the time. And the Shach, right, this is standard for the Shach. In some ways, I think this type of approach is very similar to what the Gra has. Okay, be it as it may. Be it as it may, the Shach, I would argue, is the prototypical Litvak. But I just want to make two more points. We'll try to keep it to 2 points because it's getting late. I apologize. When the Shach wrote his book, so the Shach's intention, I said, is to write a new Beis Yosef, not a new Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, again, is a concise work. The Beis Yosef is a very elaborative work. The Shach is writing a new Beis Yosef. How do I know that? He tells me it himself in the introduction to a book called Gevuras Anoshim. Gevuras Anoshim is a case like this. A woman claims that her husband is impotent. In which situations do we force the husband to give a get or not? What level of proof do you need? It's a simen in Evan HaEzer, a simen kuf nun dalet in Evan HaEzer. That's Gevuras Anoshim. Says the Shach that there is a book called Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch makes huge mistakes. On this one simen about Gevuras Anoshim, it makes some 70 mistakes. And that's the whole book. Tells you all the mistakes that Shulchan Aruch made. And then he goes through his own source analysis to tell you, right, what the correct understanding is. So really what he's saying is that I wrote my book on Shulchan Aruch because today everyone, and that's what he writes, right, explicitly, V'liyot, right after I have the four dots. Ki regilim anshei dorinu lefsok tamik kedivrei ha-shulchan aruch va-gosav lofi dati ha-klusha lo yatsu bali ha-shulchan aruch idei chovasim bedivreihem. Elu, ve'ein bahem mitom me'rosh ve'ad sof, therefore I'm going to write my book. In other words, says the Shach, today people paskin from the Shulchan Aruch. They really shouldn't, because Shulchan Aruch is making mistakes. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to solve the problem. I have them paskin from Shulchan Aruch, then they'll look at my notes on the side and I'll point out that Shulchan Aruch makes mistakes. So he's doing like a Beis Yosef, he's doing his own halachic work, he's just appending it to Shulchan Aruch, because he doesn't like Shulchan Aruch. So far so good? Now, the Gra, by the way, wrote his own Shulchan Aruch. There's a book out there called Shulchan Aruch HaGra. It's hard to get, but fine. Let's just add one more point, and then we'll conclude. The Shach is amazing. You see, Beis Yosef, Shach is like Beis Yosef, right? That's what we're saying. But Beis Yosef has a corpus of, what, 8-10 Rishonim. He quotes the Rambam, the Rif, the Rush. He'll add a little bit of Rabbeinu Yerucham, a little bit of the Ran, a little bit of the Rashba, the Rivash. No way, he has what? 8-10 Rishonim, that's it. Right? To that, the Shach has a corpus that includes the Ugur. Remember, the Ugur is the work that the Beis Yosef hates. In his introduction, he makes fun of the Ugur. He quotes the Ugur and the Aguda. He quotes the all of the Maharil, Ibn's, whatever, right? He quotes thousands of Sfarim, literally, are quoted in the Shach. Thousands of Sfarim. And he quotes tshuvas. Often the Shach and Chosh and Mishpat will write, just look in this tshuva. No one knows what he means until the newest Shulchan Aruch came out and they print the tshuva. Right? The Shach is an unbelievable work. But he's quoting thousands and thousands of sources. How on earth did the Shach get all these sources that he quotes? So the Chida has a theory. Ready? And I have a theory. The Chida has one theory, I have a different. When did the Chida live? The Chida died in... Oh, gosh. No, the Chida died, if I'm not mistaken, in the 1840s. The Chida was a Mesholach, no? He used to collect... What? 1806 he died? Thank you. Oh, it's good to be fact-check. Okay. So, the Chida has a book, Shem HaGedolim, where he discusses all of the Gedolim. That's his job. And the Chida says, how did the Shach get all these books? So he writes, V'shamati mirav echad. You see, it's underlined. I heard from a certain rabbi, Shaharav Shach Haya Yodeya Shem HaMetzia. He knew a special name of God that enabled him to find sources. Dainu Shem Kadosh al Chavim Bo Limsoha Bekiyut Shirotze Tekef Umiyad. He had a special holy name that he would pronounce, and that enabled him to find sources. That is what the Shach quotes. Okay, that's what the Chida quotes about the Shach. It's a nice theory, no? That the way the Shach got all these sources is he would say... What? And suddenly all the sources would appear to him, and basically he's attributing some supernatural power to the Shach, because there's no other way he could have done it. That's what the Chida is saying. That's an amazing feat. I have a different theory, though. What?
It's not Lithuanian thinking.
Lithuanian thinking. Right? So my theory involves Lithuanian thinking. My theory goes like this. In the year 1830, there was a journal called the Bikurei HaItzim. And Bikurei HaItzim in 1830 published a single letter that they found in the library of Leipzig that was written by the Shach. This one letter that we have of the Shach is printed in this journal, Bikurei HaItzim. What?
What country is Leipzig?
Germany. Yeah. So, Bikurei HaItzim publishes this letter in 1830. It has not been republished since then. But it's an important letter. Why is it an important letter? It's an important letter for a few reasons. Somehow Chacham Ovadia Yosef knows about this, because in Chacham Ovadia, he knows everything. He also has a Shem HaMetzia. Right? But Chacham Ovadia, in one of his tshuvas, has a discussion about whether you're allowed to write secular dates. And he says, well, there's a letter of the Shach that is written and dated the third day of February 1660. So he's using a secular date. Okay. So what's this letter of the Shach? The letter of the Shach is written to a Catholic priest named Walenty Wiedrich. Walenty Wiedrich.
What language did he write this?
So it was written in Ruthenian, apparently, originally, but it was translated into Hebrew in this journal in 1830. I don't read Ruthenian, but I sent letters in the microfilm edition of the Hebrew, in the microfilm section of the Hebrew Library. They have the original letter microfilmed. It's in Ruthenian if you want to try to figure out Ruthenian. That's why there's a difference between Lithuania and Poland, the language that they spoke. But not for now. Okay. Now, in this letter, the Shach writes to Walenty Wiedrich, who happens to be a Catholic priest, and he writes very nice things about Catholic priests in the introduction to the letter. Now, why is he being so nice? He's being so nice because this Catholic priest had a big library. You see, the University of Vilna was started in the year 1579 by King Stephen Baturi. And the University of Vilna had a massive Sfarim library for some reason. And the Shach used to borrow books. And the Shach wrote a letter to Walenty Wiedrich saying, give me the book written by Eliyahu Bachur. This is the only letter that we have of this. The Sefer, whatever I could find, the Sefer HaNosein Imre Shefer, written by an Eliyahu Bachur. But this, by the way, is not a halachic book. But the only letter we have of the Shach is asking this Catholic priest for a book. My theory is, right, that the reason why the Shach had all of these Sfarim is because the Shach lived in Vilna at this time. The library of the University of Vilna is a good library. He had access to a lot of books. That's my theory. Okay, take it or leave it. And thank you for coming. I just want to point out that this is going to be... We're going to temporarily stop this series of Shirim. Next week, I promised my son I'll take him to the Siyum HaShas. So that is next Wednesday night. And then I'm taking a few weeks off because I always take a vacation in August. And then we'll pick up I'm not exactly sure exactly which week we'll pick up, and we might pick up with like one or two shiurim about Yomim Tovim before we resume these topics. But I thank you very much for coming.